I think I would define a rebel woman as someone who defies social norms, so maybe is the first to do something.
To me, a rebel woman is someone who goes against the grain, but more specifically, it's that she sees the path she wants to take and takes it.
I think a rebel woman challenges the expectations of a predominantly masculine world.
How do you define a rebel woman? Is it to be awarded over 150 caps for England Lionesses and being on the winning squad for the Euros 2022?
And now Jill Scott, and there we have it. England are on the way.
Is it to be a multi-Brit award-winning singer? Is it to be the chief news correspondent for the BBC, being one of the first women to report from war zones around the world?
After hours of shooting and facing a line of troops, the crowd is still here.
Or is it to be heroic in the efforts of saving the lives of dozens of Jewish people during the Holocaust?
You two Cook sisters went in there time and again and brought people out because your hearts were touched. Otherwise, they died.
The Rebel Women of Sunderland is a project that shines a light on the lives of remarkable women from Sunderland who have done remarkable things. It was inspired by the popular children's book, Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls. Nominations for Rebel Women of Sunderland were crowdsourced through social media with over 100 nominations of inspirational women of the city. Every year on International Women's Day, more Rebel Women are unveiled. And this year, we're unveiling Rebel Women of Sunderland, the podcast. Across the first series, you're going to hear from rebel women within the worlds of writing, music and sport. So let's go. Sport runs through Sunderland's veins, and the city has a rich tapestry of different sports that people are passionate about.
Hi, I'm Ali Dixon. I'm a professional marathon runner.
I'm Lucy. I've played football I used to play football since I was about five.
I'm Ileana Favrova, and I'm an academic at the University of Sunderland. I have been involved in a marketing, social media, PR capacity in sport for 7-8 years, and I still am.
My name's Olivia, and I am currently a sports coach within YAV.
My name's Shazana Aslam, and I started with YAV as a youth worker, and my role now is partnership and engagement coordinator.
Literally since the day I was born, running's always been in my life. My dad was a marathon runner. He ran for the local club, did a lot of the local like 10Ks and half marathons and everything. I was dragged down to London to watch him run the early London marathons. It was great because I got to go to Hamleys and, you know, feed the pigeons in Leicester Square and all that. But watching the actual marathon was quite boring when you're only like 5 and 6. I later went down when I was a bit older and I have vivid memories of saying to my mum, like, this is just ridiculous, I'm never ever running a marathon. But he ended up running one a couple of years later.
Ali Dixon has competed in the Olympics, 2 Commonwealth Games, 7 World Championships and 2 European Championships, and held the world record for 2 years for 50 kilometres. She is also the world record holder for the fastest half marathon dressed as a superhero.
I actually joined the local athletics club because I'd made a new friend at school and she was a member of the club and they were going to Flamingoland for a day trip. So I wanted to go to Flamingoland, but you had to be a member of the club for insurance purposes and whatever. So I joined up and went to Flamingoland, and it's quite good now because it makes a brilliant title for when I do school's presentations. It was a rollercoaster journey to the top. So she packed in running not long later, and I'm still out there pounding the streets now, 32, I think it is, years later. I never really wanted to be a long distance runner because my dad did that and I wanted to be my own person, a bit independent. But it was quite obvious that I wasn't going to be the long jumper that I really had my heart set on. I must have been about 4'5" or something. So same with hurdles. The hurdles were bigger than me, so I was never going to be able to jump over them. So yeah, I just kind of got put in the middle distance squad, and then as I got older, the distances increased, and I did start to realise that actually I'm getting better the longer I go, because I don't have a lot of natural speed over the shorter distance. I'm not that fast, but I can keep on going over the longer.
Individual sports, such as running, can often face fewer gender stereotypes than those played in a team, such as football. Lucy Green.
I didn't play for a team until I was 11, because I was a bit nervous being the only girl in my primary school to play. But I've been playing since I was about 6 or 7, so quite a few years. It was crazy. I think the teacher didn't really know how to coach a girl, and the boys just didn't know how to play with girl. But I went to Castleview, my secondary school, for a talent ID programme, and the coach there just pushed me, and he didn't care that I was a girl, and the boys that I played with just didn't care. And it was like a new thing that I just found. I was like, wow, why are they not caring? And that definitely gave me the confidence to play. And then I went to Castleview and there was a girls team, and it was the first time that the school had ever been able to form a girls team, and it was run by an English teacher, and she was just brilliant, and it really pushed me and a lot of other girls to play football. And the growth of the game, like, since I'd say 2018, has just been massive. And I think that is in my school and just in general. And I think there's a lot less barriers for girls to play now.
Sadly, due to long-term injury, Lucy isn't able to play football anymore. But that hasn't stopped her from doing incredible work around Sunderland to increase the participation of girls in football.
After I found out I couldn't really play football anymore, my male teacher had put me forward to do coaching and refereeing as a way to stay in football, and I ended up doing a coaching course. It was an all-girls coaching and refereeing course, and I got taught how to referee by Rebecca Welch, and she's a local lass, and she's now first female referee to referee in the Premier League. So that was just a massive confidence boost, that this woman was teaching a bunch of 14-year-old girls how to referee. And then I didn't like the referee inside, but, you know, it's not for everyone, but I absolutely adored coaching. So I went back to my school and I was like, can I coach? And my PE teacher let me coach football in PE lessons, you know. I got to coach to boys and girls, and then my school did football festivals, and I took part in these football festivals before I went to the secondary school, but there wasn't a lot of girls went. I think I was the only girl sometimes, you know, there's 2 or 3 girls turned up. So I said to my teacher, I was like, let's have an all-female football festival for these primary school girls. So I think we had about 100 girls turn up to the school to play football, and it was like for the whole day. And we're able to do that again the next year in the summer, so it was just brilliant. And then alongside that, I made like loads of fact files. You know, you've got to kind of show the role models that girls can have in football. So I made fact files with all the female footballers, you know, female coaches. Serena Wiegmann, she's a big name at the minute, you know, my absolute hero. And I also made like where you can go watch football, where you can go play football, because it's important that girls know the pathways, because I didn't know anything. I only found my team that I played for because I went to a training session with Charlotte Potts, who now plays for Newcastle. It was very hard to find football teams, so I'm kind of hoping that what I've done is push people to go play and watch football, because it's not just about playing football, you know. It's not everyone's cup of tea playing, but to get girls involved in refereeing, coaching, journalism, it's just about getting girls more involved in it and inspire girls to do more within football and just sport in general.
As Lucy says, it's important for women to know there are opportunities in all areas of sport, not just playing. Ileana Farfarova.
I'm originally from Bulgaria. I always wanted to be involved in sport in some capacity, but I wasn't very good of an athlete, so I knew that it needed to be either sports journalism or a marketing-based role, which is what brought me to Sunderland. I've seen the sports journalism course, and I've never visited Sunderland beforehand, but the course looked amazing and it looked exactly like what I wanted to do. I was so passionate about sport, particularly winter sport, but I loved football as well. And the fact that you get to graduate at the Stadium of Light definitely was something that got me to Sunderland and put Sunderland as my first choice. So that's how I ended up coming here. So I studied sports journalism as an undergraduate. I spent 3 years on that. And then I came back later on to the university to do a master's in public relations, which got me to my job in cricket.
Ileana did a work placement at Durham Cricket as part of her degree and ended up working there permanently for 7 years.
My job had to do with promoting the sport, predominantly promoting recreational cricket so that more people take it up, so that it doesn't stay out of date, so that we're always kept up with the demand of people's routines. At the time, we kept saying keep the sport alive because it was a really crucial time. We had to compete with a lot of other things in the sport, and we felt like it probably the sport wasn't relevant anymore for a number of reasons. So there was a really big piece of work that was being done on a national basis, and my job was to have a play on that and to have as many kids, as many women, as many people involved in the game. It was my responsibility to make them aware of the game, to get them to play, to convince them to play or to have a go, and then to retain them in the game for as long as possible.
Ileana's role at Durham Cricket also led her to work with Young Asian Voices.
My involvement in YAV is multifaceted. I am a trustee on the board of directors. They're a charity located in Sunderland. It was through cricket that I got to meet them. It's because we were trying to get to new communities in Sunderland particularly, and they were already very established, and they had all the network was kind of created around their charity, and we wanted them to be ambassadors and to help us drive a really important project for us, which was to get more communities that otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity to play cricket to play cricket.
So should I just say I like playing cricket because it's so fun?
She's gonna ask you some questions.
Oh, okay. So my name is Anaya, and at YAV I play cricket. Well, at first I'm like, I don't want to do it, and then after I kept playing it and I just liked it. When you hit it, the ball with the bat, it's just fun. It's so easy.
Olivia Coxon is a sports coach at YAV.
Usually I coach all the sports on a Friday, so we have the multi-sport session. That's where we deliver to younger children football, cricket, we have badminton, tennis. We do stuff like the kids like. I mainly work though on like cricket and football within YAV. I've always had the love for it. I've wanted to coach it, and YAV's given us the opportunity now where I'm a qualified cricket coach and I can bring my skills into YAV. It literally put a smile on my face because we had a volunteer come in, doesn't know how to play cricket. On that Monday train session, I taught her how to bowl. She went into the tournament on Sunday and was bowling amazing, and we were like, oh, well done. Like, we couldn't be happier for her.
I started my coaching career, I would say now, about 6 years ago. I was the only female in YAV who actually had heard of cricket.
Shazana Aslam is the Partnership and Engagement Coordinator at YAV and is one of their cricket coaches.
So I'm from Yorkshire originally, and we grew up following cricket most of our life, and I followed Pakistan cricket team. So I used to go and watch and things like that and watch it on TV. So I knew some of the rules. I'm not an expert on it, but I knew some of the rules and understood. So I had an opportunity to do my level 2 qualification with Durham Cricket Board through the ECB. And so I was surprised that I actually passed and got through it all. So training at Durham in person, and then actually running a session to pass the qualification. And after that, I started delivering in some of the schools for a street program. It's called Chance to Shine. And that's offering opportunity to young people to come off the streets, find a safe space, and to engage and enjoy cricket. Obviously, growing up in a very sort of white society as a Muslim younger person, we weren't allowed to go out anywhere. There was lots of barriers, and I was quite surprised when I started my youth work to see that some of the girls were still facing that after so many years. And I think for me it was my passion to try and make sure that there was a safe space somewhere where we could build trust with the parents and develop these opportunities for young people to be able to come and actually try out different activities. Obviously cricket is one of the elements that allowed me to do that. So we started with our girls cricket club, and we had our girls only, I think there was about 18 participants that used to come every Friday. They took part in different competitions, and then it developed onto delivering in schools, and now we have our own group of, I would say, activators, level 1 qualified coaches and level 2 cricket coaches in YAV, and it's absolutely amazing to see that journey of all the colleagues coming through as well as the young people.
it's not only the younger girls that have benefited from playing cricket at YAV.
We've also got kids who are from, like, especially girls whose parents have probably never played sport, or especially the mums have never taken part in sport. And I think having the girls doing that and having the opportunity and not having any pressure as well, because they can develop at their own pace, it's actually led to the women's group actually asking for the cricket as well. So now we have our women and girls sessions and run by my colleagues as well. So it's absolutely amazing. And knowing that they're safe, you know, it's an environment where they know that nobody's watching, nobody's judging them. They can dress in whatever they want. And then when they see their children succeeding as well, and then they've come to, especially our under nines, when we've had the games, I've seen the parents come in and you can see how proud of their daughters that they are when they're seeing them playing on the in the team. I mean, the satisfaction of just seeing girls actually playing, and then cricket of all things, you know, it's absolutely amazing. I absolutely love it, and I feel like it makes my job worthwhile for me, so it gives me that full satisfaction, and I just hope we can develop it further.
Look back and to think that in 8 years we have made a transformative change from going to nearly zero girls teams in the whole of the county and very few women's teams to now many, many, many girls and women playing cricket and loads of cricket clubs actually offering that as a provision. I think we have made really important strides towards that, but it will take a really long time to equal all of this out, and it needs to be sustained in the work that is being done. And I think it's a really long-term project, to be honest, because when girls get to a certain age they drop out of the game for one reason or another, so we have to think about continue to recruit as well as we have, but also think of ways to sustain and retain that game to be able to get to that ideal place. So I think there's a lot more work to be done.
YAV are making huge strides in training up their female coaches. Lucy Green shares her thoughts on the importance of female football coaches.
I was surrounded by men who didn't know how to deal with it, but I've got to say, if a man is as capable as a woman to do the job of, like, female football coach, you know, I've had male coaches in my teams, I've had a male form tutor who really pushed me. It's not so much about who's doing it, it's about the passion that they've got. And if they've got the same respect and the same passion as a female person, you know, I really think it's important. But it really is important to get more female coaches into football, because I did feel a lot more comfortable having a woman coaching me. You know, she understood the problems with girls playing football, how much more nervous we were, the other problems that we face while being girls playing football, because there is more than just the stereotyping and things like that. A problem we struggled with was our football kit. And it started off being that we had to share with the boys, and it just wasn't very fair. It was a bit dirty and the kits didn't fit. And then I think it was last year, I was speaking to some of the younger girls who were playing, and I was like, I don't think it's very suitable that we're playing in lime green shorts. After, you know, the England Lionesses complained about playing in white shorts with, you know, the period problems, and I thought we need that changing. So kits are a massive part of the problem with girls playing football, because girls don't feel comfortable playing in lime green shorts or white shorts, you know. And I just think that making small adjustments like that makes girls feel so much more comfortable playing. And it's not just kits, you know, it's other things, but the small adjustments, not as the massive ones like female coaches, that everything matters.
Lucy discusses why she was inspired to speak up.
There's a stigma around things like that, and I, definitely after the Lionesses spoke up about it, I felt a bit more comfortable to speak up in my school.
In 2023, the Lionesses voiced their discomfort at playing in white shorts, and the kits were changed as a result of this.
The male teachers, they didn't care, they understood, and I think I've been brought up in an environment with some brilliant people. I don't think everyone is as lucky as me. So I think if girls realise that it is something that they can just say, if they don't feel comfortable doing something, they do just need to say it, and there can be amendments made. And I think girls need to realise that, you know, they can play, but it's just finding how to make them feel comfortable playing.
Girls face different challenges when taking part in sports, and it's common for them to not stick with it. Ali Dixon.
I was quite a late bloomer. I didn't get my first England international until I was 29. And then closely followed by my first GB international, which was 2 weeks or so after my 30th birthday. So quite late in terms of kind of athletics development. You normally hear all these people, they'll say like, oh, my PE teacher noticed my talent and they encouraged. Nah, I was like at the back, and I was a jack of all trades, really. I did every sport going as a kid at school. I was always the one that the PE teacher could rely on. Oh, we need a netballer, we need a hockey player. And I just burnt off energy by running around. I was never any good at any of these sports, but I loved being active and being outdoors. But yeah, kind of my love for running obviously shone through. It got us through those late teenage years where a lot of people leave the sport because, you know, the girls discover boys and alcohol and all that kind of stuff. But no, I kept on going. I had friends at the running club that became my social life, so that kind of helped. And a lot of the people that I ran with at an early age, they're still my friends now, so I made lifelong friends at it.
Although Ali had been running from a young age, the path to become a professional runner wasn't a linear one.
I did my university, I got full-time jobs and everything, and then I was still working full-time when I got my first internationals. I then dropped out of part-time, and then it wasn't actually until 2015 that I went full-time athletics, because that was me going, right, this is literally my last chance of achieving that Olympic dream. And I just threw the kitchen sink at it, and, you know, thankfully it paid off. Otherwise I would have just been like unemployed and broke. But it gave us a backup so that it wasn't just athletics, because you see so many now, they've been really good juniors and then they've got nowhere to go from that. You know, they can't up the training because they're already maxed out on the training, or the rest of their age group are then catching up with them on maturity levels. And for a lot of them, they only enjoy it because they're winning. As soon as they start getting beat, the enjoyment goes, and then they're like, well, I've got to work harder, I've got to dedicate more. And when it doesn't come instantly, especially nowadays, they're like, I'm not prepared to wait 10, 20 years for success. So I think it was better that way. And it gave us something to fall back on when the career finally came to an end. I had other life experiences to draw on instead of just going, what am I going to do now? I'm really good at running and nothing much else. So it was much better, and yeah, give you another perspective to life.
Ali Dixon was unveiled as a rebel woman on International Women's Day in 2020.
First of all, I actually felt quite naughty because rebel women are just like, you know, we're rebellious. But no, it was a huge honour, because especially when you then look at the list of who else is on there, you're like, well, I've not done anything to deserve this. I've just, you know, I'm a girl from Sunderland who loves to run, and because of that love for running, I've managed to get good at it. And, you know, it's kind of, I never really see myself as kind of anything special. It's just me. Even now, like, being an Olympian, I'm like, I don't feel like an Olympian, but then I don't know what an Olympian's meant to feel like, because I've always looked at them as like demigods and superheroes. I don't see myself as that. I just see myself as a normal girl from Sunderland who loves to run. Achieved pretty much everything that I ever wanted to achieve in athletics. Some things, you know, that I never ever believed I could achieve, like making the Olympics is something that you always dreamt of, but you never really believed that you would make it. And winning a world championship, a world title, again, a little lass from Sunderland doesn't do these things, and breaking a world record in the process. And it was my first time I'd ever ran that distance as well. So I've achieved what I believe to be unachievable. And if I can inspire other kids, especially girls, to just try and see what they can achieve, then, you know, it makes that journey even more special.
Shazana Aslam discusses what the term rebel women could mean.
If I base it on what rebel has been defined as, it's somebody who's out the norm, somebody who will defy what isn't supposed to be done, or, you know, you looked upon like that. And to be honest with you, I did face that. I do face that from our community sometimes. I know, like, I don't wear the headscarf, so I know I can be judged on that sometimes as well. I'm not your typical kind of Asian attire person as well, so I do get judged on that sometimes. But, you know, I'm not a rebel, but I do like to try and make change. And I think for me, it's the passion to try and make the change and develop new opportunities for young girls, because it's not fair in this day and age that they still have these barriers. And, you know, they should have as equal right as the boys to be able to do whatever they want, how they want.
I think it's incredible what this project is doing, and it's fantastic to shine a light on some of those women that are making a difference in their own ways, in their own industries. And it's really important to do that. It's important to showcase that regardless of where you want to be and what you want to do, there is opportunities for you, there's support for you. And women can do amazing things. Anybody can do amazing things. So I think it's about believing in yourself. And I think when you shine a light, when you give case studies like Rebel Women of Sunderland are doing to young people, but even actually, I don't think that age matters. I think if you've got something that you are really passionate about and you think that you can make a real difference, then you can do it. And it's only up to you. I think the situation, luck is going to come on your side. People are going to be on your side. And it's really empowering when you hear other people achieving incredible things in the field that they've chosen. So I think there are two things. One, showcasing a light on these people that have been very successful and are doing their own thing. And second, being empowering and inspirational to all those that are thinking about, I want to do something. I'm not quite sure whether it's worthwhile. Well, it is worthwhile because you can make it. And here are all of the case studies of all of those women that have done incredibly well.
My history teacher showed us it as part of our life skills lesson. I just think it gave me a massive sense of like pride from where I am, because it's quite hard being brought up in Sunderland because there is so much wrong, and I didn't really know about any female people. You know, you don't really know many famous names from Sunderland, never mind women. You know, I was always brought up with my mum telling us Dave Stewart's from here, and it's just like, well, yeah. But now that, you know, definitely within football, there are so many female footballers from Sunderland. It's crazy. Or who have had, like, links to Sunderland Football Club. It has gave us a sense of pride to be where I'm from, you know. And the more I learn about it, the more I'm like, wow, you know, there's some great authors from Sunderland. Glenda Young, she went to university with my mum, so, you know, I know all about her. So, you know, it's brilliant. It does make me feel more proud to be from Sunderland, like, every time I think about the people who have came from here and the people who have had such an influence here.
Rebel Women has uncovered women of history, told the stories of the great, and highlighted some remarkable women who come out of the region. But what are the hopes for future Rebel Women?
Just that it keeps on growing and we promote all the good women of Sunderland. We do have so many unsung heroes out there.
I think there are a lot of people that are from Sunderland, ones that are associated with Sunderland or have got a close connection for whatever reason to the city, that are all doing amazing things. And I think we're all Rebel Women in some aspect of our lives. So I think the future is hopefully shining a light on more people and as many as possible.
If we inspire again the youth to have that positive outlook on both men's and women's football, it'll sort itself out, but we just need to work on the young people who will come through to be the next journalists, the next players, the next managers, you know, the next referees. And that whole inequality should stop.
I think just being themselves, having an opportunity to do what they want, when they want, how they want, but being safe at the same time and not feeling vulnerable or being able to do what they want, really. I think it's about time women should be able to have a choice.
Rebel Women of Sunderland, the podcast, is a University of Sunderland and We Make Culture production. Produced by Lottie Steele and Grace McDonough. Music by the Rebel Women students at the Northern Academy of Music Education and presented by me, Bobby Bunker. For more information about the project, head to the link in the show notes.